Welcome to All Things Marine, Hawaii's thought-provoking show dedicated to marine science and ocean conservation. All Things Marine, brought to you by Kosi Island Earth and the University of Hawaii, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. And now, here's your host, the marine science gal, Carly Weiner.
Aloha, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, and today we are going to hear from several groups in Hawaii carrying out amazing projects to help conserve our oceans here in the islands. From shorelines to marine debris, we have it all. With us in the studio first is Marjorie Ziegler. Marjorie may be familiar to you as she's been working in Hawaii's conservation community for many years. Protecting our islands, Makua to Makai, Marjorie is the Executive Director for the Conservation Council of Hawaii. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carly.
So first tell us about the Conservation Council of Hawaii.
I'd be happy to. Conservation Council for Hawaii is one of the oldest wildlife organizations in the islands. We were formed in 1950. And we're a membership organization, a 501c3 nonprofit, and we mostly focus on policy at the policy level, but we also use education in the schools and some on-the-ground projects.
Excellent. And how did you first get involved in conservation here in Hawaii and with the Conservation Council?
Well, I in graduate school at mm-hmm. the University of Manoa, I was in geography, and I was very interested in endangered species policy. And there weren't a lot of programs in those days about, you know, about this topic. And so I ended up in geography doing a lot of directed research or whatever it's called, where you work with different agencies. And I ended up interning and working, volunteering with the Nature Conservancy and the state of Hawaii and the National Park Service and the Fish and Wildlife Service. And I, you know, that just kind of, it just kind of confirmed what I thought I wanted to do in my career. So I've been doing it for 30 years. You know, I've been kind of on the front lines for a long time, seen a lot of changes, mostly for the good. But we definitely have some major challenges here. I was hired 13 years ago to be the executive director of the Conservation Council for Hawaii.
Excellent. And I mean, working 30 years in the community, I'm sure you've seen a lot. What stands out to you as some of the biggest positive changes that you've seen and maybe some of the most concerning?
The biggest positive change I've seen are the community-based, place-based organizations that exist, from very formal to, you know, unincorporated neighborhood community groups. That was something that was not very common 30 years ago, and I see it as a very, very positive change because government cannot protect our resources alone, and they shouldn't. But the government does have resources that the communities don't, so I see this community-based movement as a very, very positive partnership, if you will, with regulatory agencies. Mm-hmm. It's not one or the other, but a very positive partnership.
Sure, absolutely. And what about the most concerning?
The most concerning thing I think I've noticed in you know, 30 years is not that long, really. It's long for me. It's long for one lifetime. But the issues don't change that much. You know, I was looking at some of the, we did a timeline for the Conservation Council for Hawaii, which is on our website, and it shows 64 years of our work by decade. And so I had to research what to put on that timeline. And so I'm looking at the 50s and the 60s, and it's like, help protect and save the monk seal, protect the sea turtles. I mean, you know, the issues don't really change that much. And for me, I mean, we're a wildlife organization, and my passion is wildlife. And so, and that's our mission, is to protect native Hawaiian plants and animals and ecosystems for our kids and generations to come. So the most challenging thing, I think, is the loss of biodiversity globally and locally. Yep. And it's not a real sexy issue for a lot of people. But it, I think there was a survey done by the State Department of Health a few decades ago, probably. and it was interesting. They measured perception, public perception, on what was the most serious environmental challenge of the day versus what really is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the public perception was stuff like pollution. And, you know, we're pretty good on air pollution. We're, you know, our oceans are polluted, but not terribly so. We're a pretty clean state relative to some of the big industrial states on the continent. And biodiversity, the loss of species, is actually, according to this survey, the most challenging issue that we face, and yet it's a tough one.
Well, especially here in Hawaii when we have so many native species. So, I mean, growing up in Hawaii, did this influence your love of the natural world? I mean, did you have firsthand experience being able to go out and appreciate some of the wildlife?
Right. Well, actually, I grew up in Hawaii and on the mainland. I was born and raised until I was 10 years old in the Bay Area. My dad is a vertebrate zoologist. He passed away, but he studied animals. He was an animal guy. And
so it runs in the family.
It does. It runs in the family. And my mother likes farm animals and pets. And so, you know, I grew up in a household that had a lot of animals from my dad's university days at Berkeley to when he got a job at the Bishop Museum in charge of the vertebrate zoology division. So we grew up with, you know, things boiling and on the stove and things sort of drying and things in the freezer that says do not eat, because, you know, vertebrate zoologists use bones to identify things from the archaeological studies. And so we kind of grew up with all of that. So, yeah, you know, I was a teenager. I didn't really care. I just wanted to go to the beach and go to Ala Moana Shopping Center. But, you know, my dad would have me paint signs, save the whales. There was big whale issues back in the 70s. So I kind of grew up with it, but I also, my dad took us camping a lot when we were kids.
And that's so important, I think, is getting that connection to nature, to care about it. How does CCH connect people with the wilderness, and how do you get people to get involved?
Right. Well, in Hawaii, it's not that big of a challenge because we have the beach right here. So, and our organization is very small. I should say that for the last, you know, 10 years or so, it was just myself as a staff person. And now we have two people. And so we focus our limited resources on policy. Mm-hmm. So connecting people with nature looks for us more like, rather than planting trees and picking up marine debris, which is very important. And we do a little of that. But what we mostly do is try and educate the kids. Mm-hmm. Educate our legislators. It's called lobbying. educate agencies. It's called litigation. And so our connecting people with nature looks more like our annual wildlife poster to the schools. We raise $20,000, $18,000 a year, almost every year, to get posters out to 450 schools. And that's not a hands-on connection to nature, but the teachers seem to like the materials because we focus on species that the kids may not be that familiar with. You know, we're all familiar with the turtles and the monk seals because we're at the beach. We're on the coast, on the water. So that's one of our ways of connecting people with nature, and it's probably our main program.
And such an important time for policy education. You know, I know climate change is also a central mission for your organization. Do you have anything planned for the next coming year, for 2017, to contribute to this goal?
Well, you know, I think you probably got that from one of our websites where, you know, that's a strategic driver that's been driving our work for about the last 3 to 5 years. And we're due to reevaluate our strategic drivers next year. But climate change is always going to be a high priority because it's the biggest threat we face as humans and for wildlife and the earth as we know it. Hawaii is relatively good. You know, we have pretty strong laws. We're the first state to pass certain laws addressing energy use, and I think we're doing a pretty good job here. Yeah. And so we were in the past very active in lobbying for bills that address climate change and energy use. I think the challenge is going to be nationally, and especially with the last election. So I think next year we're just going to be on standby, and it's going to be more reactive.
I think everyone's on standby, waiting to see how that's going to change.
Yeah, yeah. One of the first things we did with climate change, before there were lots of agencies and groups and cooperatives and coalitions focusing on this, we were one of the first groups to point out how climate change affects animals in Hawaii, plants and animals in Hawaii, from the vacu bug on the summit of Mauna Kea to, you know, the edge of our reefs and the pelagic fisheries. And so now there are lots of agencies and groups focusing on adaptation. You know, first you got to know how we're going to be affected, and then you got to figure out how we're going to mitigate those impacts, how we're going to adapt to those impacts that we can't possibly avoid. But I'm real proud that we were one of the first organizations to start saying, hey, you know, in addition to solar and kilowatts and all that stuff, remember the animals and the plants that are going to be harmed, including our forest birds, our sea turtles, our monk seals. They're, you know, hauling out on the sand beaches. Where are they going to haul out with sea level rise? So that was one of our early focuses.
So here locally, I mean, nationally, it's anybody's guess right now, but here locally, what would you like to see policymakers turn their attention to into 2017?
Oh, that's a good question. More funding for the environment, especially biodiversity, protecting species and habitats.
Yep.
More money for adapting to and mitigating climate change impacts, which is for the wildlife and the habitats. I'd like to see way more funding on that. I hate to say this, I don't have a lot of faith in the legislature, but they do some good things. It's a mixed bag. And so sometimes they pass some very good laws. Like this past session, we went a little beyond our mission and we focused on the elephant bill, the wildlife trafficking bill. Very proud of the legislature for passing that. We have the most comprehensive wildlife trafficking ban bill in the country.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. We'd been working with Inga Gibson and Humane Society of the United States for several years and others on just the elephants. And this bill is like includes dozens of species, including the elephants. So, you know, I haven't really thought that much. I mean, I'm really waiting to meet with my board to figure out what, if anything, are we going to be proactive about in the legislature? Because most of the time we are reactive mm-hmm. in the ledge. We don't have any bills planned to introduce this session. So we'll see.
Excellent. And I have to ask, you're wearing an Expand Papahana Mokuakea shirt. What involvement did you have with the expansion of the monument?
Well, that was a really exciting campaign, probably one of the most fun things I ever worked on. Mm-hmm. Very, very honored. We're very honored to stand by the Native Hawaiian Cultural Working Group in support of expanding the monument out to 200 nautical miles. And we were invited to join the Expand team, which was a somewhat coordinated effort to our mission was to raise public awareness and support for the expansion, and I think we succeeded. I hear millions of people signed the petition, and we had a lot of support going to I think our legislators and our congressional delegation heard the people, and the final proposal from Senator Schatz was very accommodating to our day boat fishers and fishers from Kauai and Niihau, because mm-hmm. we're not worried about those guys and their areas are safe. But it does keep the large extractive activities out of our monument. And that's going to be really important. You're talking about climate change. You know, the fish are already moving. They're moving east, they're moving north or south, away from the equator as it warms. And our northwestern Hawaiian islands and Papahanao Mokuakea will be a refuge for the ahi and the large pelagic species as they move into these waters. And at least when they're in these waters, they'll be safe and they'll get big and they'll reproduce. And that's really what it's all about, to keep it sustainable. So we're real happy about that. And we'll see what happens. You know, it's unclear what's going to happen with the next administration, but
Yeah. It was a good day. It was a win.
It was a very good day. You know, large protected areas in the marine environment are proven to work.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, hopefully other countries will take note and continue that trend.
Right, right.
Bigger is better.
Well, our expanded monument was only the largest protected area, land or sea, mm-hmm. for a little while, and somebody already beat us. And it's not a contest. I'm not trying to trivialize this, but you know, we are happy that we are no longer the largest protected area in the world, and that somebody else has designated. And I can't remember who it was, but it was maybe a month ago. It wasn't too long ago.
Well, hey, let that competition continue, right? Yes. That's a great trend to move towards.
That's right.
So you said you don't have any bills planned for this coming year, but what are your biggest priorities and concerns for environmental conservation in Hawaii? Is there specific things that you are focusing on or that you'd really like to work with?
Yeah, I think next year we're going to go Mauka. We've been Makai for a long time, and we will continue our advocacy for the monk seal funding. You know, mm-hmm. funding for recovery is critical for the monk seal. Also, just raising awareness, you know, the killings, the intentional killings, the bad feelings that sometimes occur because of the interactions between seals and fishers mostly. You know, we offered, you know, rewards for the different killings and such. So we want to continue to be sort of a defender of the seals, if you will. But we would like to raise some awareness on the Hawaiian Humpback Whale Sanctuary. And as you know, they tried to expand that sanctuary to include multi-species, which would have been so great for us, because then the feds could focus on all kinds of problems like pollution and invasives and things that are more difficult to tie to the humpback whale but are easier to tie to other marine species. And that failed, and it showed us that a lot of people didn't know. Well, actually, the state declined, but the bottom line is we learned that a lot of people didn't know about the Hawaiian Humpback Whale Sanctuary, and they just, I don't know, it was just this reaction, you know, to more federal, whatever, even though we had a lot of grassroots groups supporting us. So we would like to raise awareness on three things regarding the sanctuary: whale entanglement, what to do and not do when you see a marine mammal, or humpback whale in this case, entangled. We'd like to raise more awareness about whale count.
Yeah,
because a lot of people know about it that are already involved, but there are others that don't know anything about it that might want to come in. So CCH, we're going to be hosting, I think, some whale counts this coming year. And then just advertising the fact that they have a wonderful educational facility in Kihei for the sanctuary. Great people working on the sanctuary in every island. And then we want to go Mauka. So we're going to be looking at some of the forest bird issues, particularly predators, rats, mongooses, mice, feral cats. Kauai has two or three birds that are on the verge that we'll probably lose in the next 5 years or 10 years unless we take some drastic action. And I feel like the wildlife organizations, the few that remain in Hawaii, need to really step up. And, you know, these are not easy issues. These are complex issues, you know, using rodenticides, you know, trapping cats, removing feral cats from certain areas that need to be worked out with all the people. But if we do nothing, we will lose these animals. So it comes down to values and choices.
Yeah. There's, I mean, so much to learn and so many issues to take note of. Where can people go to learn more?
Our website is somewhat up to date. Facebook is good too, but we have a website, www.conservehigh.org. Just Google Conservation Council for Hawaii. You'll find us. Give us a call. Get on our action alert. You know, we've got thousands of people on our action alert list. So we do put out the word when we need testimony, when we need people writing letters, signing letters. But give a call, you know, and join us. The membership is any amount. We don't care. Anyone who loves Native Hawaiian plants and animals is welcome to join the Conservation Council for Hawaii.
Well, that's a pretty good add to me if you love animals and to join. Thank you so much, Marjorie, for taking some time to be with us here today. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to learn more about making a difference in Hawaii's marine systems.
Quarterback looking, firing across the middle. Wow, what a grab in traffic. Largent really had defenders hanging all over, but somehow he comes up with the football.
On the football field, you've got to stay focused and not get distracted.
NFL Hall of Famer and President and CEO of CTIA, the Wireless Association, Steve Largent.
The same is true on the road. So before your wireless phone becomes a distraction, take a timeout for safety. Place your phone in easy reach before you leave. Never take notes or look up a phone number while you're driving. In bad weather or traffic, call later. Dial sensibly and use a hands-free device. You know, your wireless phone can be your best safety tool to call for help, stop a crime, or help someone in need. However you use it, remember, with wireless, safety is your call.
The wireless industry reminds you to drive safely. For more information, visit www.wirelesssafety.org.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal. With us now is a group that's doing some amazing work for our coastlines. Today with us is Magda Flores from the Sustainable Coastlines Hawaii. She is the Education and Outreach Coordinator working to do amazing things here in our islands. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Carly. Thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk a little bit about this marine plastic pollution issue. It's quite a large issue and something that faces a lot of people here in Hawaii. How big is this problem?
Well, in Hawaii, it's a significant issue. It's also kind of like where we're located. We're a remote archipelago, but we're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and there are huge currents that go around us collecting trash from all over the world and just essentially washing it onto our beaches. So if you've been to our beaches, especially on the east side, we get a huge amount of marine debris, whether it's fishing gear, also little pieces of microplastics, just a lot of it. It's tremendous. And then if you go kind of more south shore, west side, most of the litter is probably it's trash left behind, or it's litter washing down from our rivers and streams. So definitely it's a significant issue. Like, there's not a single beach on this island, at least on Oahu, that doesn't have trash or plastic debris.
Sure. And definitely if you've been here long enough, you've noticed an increase, at least I have, in certain beaches like Kailua Beach and stuff, the microplastics in the sand. You see that a lot more frequently. What are the differences between regular plastic pollution and microplastics that we hear so much about?
Yeah, so regular plastic pollution, I would consider that just like litter, trash that, you know, you would see on your street, or that would wash downstream. It's trash left behind, or like flying out the back of dump trucks, trash that ends up in our landfills. That would be regular plastic pollution, things that you can see what they are, whether it's like plastic utensils or like a refrigerator, mm-hmm. something like that. But microplastics, they're technically small pieces of plastics. They're less than 5 millimeters. And these are mainly formed when plastic is left out in the sun for many, many years. And it starts photodegrading, which is the lights breaking it up into little pieces. And now you have all these little pieces kind of either strewn on the ground or in the ocean. A lot of it is in the ocean. When the trash ends up through our waterways into the ocean, it just kind of sits there, breaking up into little pieces, and those are the microplastics.
Sure. Yeah. So what's the biggest concern then for these microplastics? Why are they more troublesome than regular plastic?
I would say they're probably both equally troublesome, regular versus microplastics. One of the issues with plastic pollution in general, especially for wildlife, is animals are consuming this, like sea turtles eating plastic bags, thinking it's a jellyfish, or smaller fish are also attracted to these microplastics. There was recent research that found out that these microplastics are kind of like junk food for animals. They're attracted to them. And the most recent paper came out saying that these pieces also, because of the algae growing on it, it smells like food. So we have seabirds eating it. So one of the biggest concerns with plastic pollution is ingestion by wildlife. And it's kind of choking them. It's also choking our, you know, the smaller microplankton, like zooplankton and phytoplankton. It's kind of choking our oceans as well. And the larger pieces are also dangerous, especially fishing debris can lead to entanglement. Larger animals we know every year, like whales, humpback whales, when they come to Hawaii, or monk seals, they get entangled, dolphins, sharks. So it's an issue of ingestion. Animals are eating it. Animals are getting entangled in it. It's also kind of getting in our waterways and in our soil and polluting that as well.
Well, big or small, it's not a good thing. And I know you guys do a lot to educate the community about plastic pollution. Can you give us an overview of some of the programs that you guys do?
Yeah, of course. Our biggest program right now is our education program. It's a K-12 program. We have a mobile classroom, and we take it from school to school, and we educate students about plastic pollution. We focus on hands-on activities so they can actually learn about all of what kind of trash that's out there, showing them different examples. And then we also offer achievable solutions, because to a lot of people, they don't really know where to start when they see all this trash that's out there. So we like to focus on that. And then we also have an outreach program where we go to events. A lot of times we get invited. And so we just, you know, go out to events to educate people about plastic pollution and offering solutions. What can they do in their everyday lives to make an impact? We have a couple other programs. We have a waste diversion program where we work events, major events, like right now at the Vans Triple Crown of Surfing that's happening in on North Shore, where we educate people about the trash they're producing, and we try to divert it. So compostable versus recyclable trash, we're able to divert a lot of the trash and prevent it from ending up in our landfills. And then our biggest project right now is the Alawai Trash Wheel. And I know you'll be asking me more, so we'll talk more about that.
Yeah, I'm saving that one for last, because I'm most interested in that, giving away all my secrets here. So I mean, you're doing public education and you're also working in the schools. When you do public education at these events like the Vans Triple Crown for surfing, how does the public respond to your work there? I mean, are they receptive? And you say, you know, educating them. How do you do that? How do you engage the public?
That's a great question. We do get we get positive feedback, and people are willing. We've noticed generally are willing to make changes in their day to day lives to help this kind of prevent or mitigate this issue. We are also, I think, one of the ways we try to draw them is currently we're using our education station. So we have this setup of different types of debris, and that really attracts people because when they see some of the things that we have that we've collected on our beaches, they just walk up, they're like, what is this? Like, I'll have a jar of microplastics, or I'll have like a big buoy that washed on, you know, to our beaches. And so that's kind of engages them and starts the conversation.
And so were you invited to the Vans Triple Crown to do this work, or how did that idea come? Because I think it's a great, fantastic avenue for education.
It definitely is. It actually first started as our director and some of his friends volunteering for Vans Triple Crown a few years ago said, hey, we would, you know, there's a lot of trash being produced and we would like to find a way to divert it, compost what we can, recycle what we can. And then after realizing how challenging it was, they kind of went back the next year offering it as a service. So we've been doing it for a couple of years, and we've been kind of collaborated with them. Our director Kahi knows people within Vans itself and the World Surf League. So we've been collaborating with them for a few years now to bring our waste diversion program.
Excellent. And have you guys gotten any kudos from the surfers themselves? Are they composting and separating their trash?
I don't know yet. It just started a few days ago, so it's kind of early to say that for this year. But in the past, we have had even like pro surfers supporting us and bringing awareness to what we're doing at these events.
Excellent. So you talk about waste diversification education, and I'm guessing that's really learning how to separate out your trash and not just throwing out everything in the garbage. What can people at home do to learn more about their waste diversification, or what can they do?
At home, I would say the best thing they can do is avoid plastic whenever possible. So, you know, it's something simple as bringing a reusable bag with you when you go to the grocery store to avoid bringing, you know, using plastic bags. It's also if you go out to eat, avoid using single-use plastics and avoid styrofoam containers. Bring your own. It'll take a few times to remember it. But if you just focus on one thing at a time, you can really build up over time and start refusing more and more plastic. That's what we really encourage people to do. Refuse like single-use utensils or straws, styrofoam containers. Kind of bring your own from home.
Yep.
And that's one of the best ways we can cut down on all the plastic that's out there.
It's so important. I can say Holly, our science communication intern, is sitting here. We went for coffee this morning and she brought her own cup with her. So
that
was a
awesome.
Perfect example of being something easy to do, bring your cup to
exactly
the coffee shop. So you also host a lot of beach cleanups. How did you guys get organized for those, and how often do you do them?
Our beach cleanups, we tend to kind of plan a year ahead, like our beach cleanups for next year are already planned. And on an average, I would say we do about 5 to 6 big beach cleanups a year. We kind of focus on the big effort, cleanup efforts. So on Oahu itself, we have, 4 cleanups planned up. So we'll be doing one at Kahuku, one at Waikiki, one at Makua Beach, and then one at Waimanalo Beach. And then we also have two off-island ones. So next year, we're excited. We're going to Lanai for the first time.
Fantastic.
Just to help the community there, and then also Kauai. So we try to have a couple of off-island and Molokai. We do a few off-island cleanups, and then we focus some of our major efforts on Oahu.
Sure. How do you pick your locations? Is it based on need or just spreading the wealth? Or how do you pick the beaches that you work on?
It's kind of like based on need and community. We want to serve the community as well, like especially like Makua, for example. Makua, there's a huge push for making it more sustainable, cleaning it up, and Makua is one of those beaches that gets a lot of trash. So we've kind of been going back there year after year. That's our focus on the west side, trying to bring the community together, In Waimanalo, that's another underserved community, and we want to help them. And we kind of spread the cleanup. It's not just Waimanalo. We go up and down, like from Belos all the way to Makapu. Kahuku, we partner with Turtle Bay every year when they have festivals, like their yoga festival next year. Mm-hmm. So that's why we focus efforts. And Kahuku gets a lot of marine debris, and they're not many people going there to do cleanups. So sure. It's like a big effort to go out there and pick it up. And then we recently started focusing on Waikiki just to even bring awareness to tourists and people visiting Hawaii as well, and not just the local communities.
Well, yeah. Seems like a great strategy. Do you count or weigh the debris that you pick up and that you collect, or how do you measure your effectiveness when you're doing these cleanups?
We do weigh our debris, especially, for example, I'll give you Makua because that was our last cleanup. We had Matson donated some shipping containers for us to fill them up. And at the end of the cleanup, we kind of put all the debris in there and then we weighed them, and it was somewhere between 14 and 15,000 pounds. Now, that's Makua, though. Every beach is different. Some of the other beaches, we kind of put them in these large sacks. And sure. We weigh the sack, so it really depends. But we do weigh it at the end of our cleanups, like how much trash we've collected.
And I know your focus is on education as well through cleanups and through things like the waste diversification. You also have an education station in the North Shore?
Yes. That is our mobile classroom. It was a shipping container that's been upcycled, turned into a classroom. And I encourage anyone on North Shore, come check us out. That's the one we take from school to school, and right now it's at the North Shore. It's in the grassy area right next to the North Shore Marketplace, and people can just walk over, check us out. We're also offering free public presentations throughout the day to, educational presentations. Sure. We also have hands-on activities if you want to learn how to sand sift, and if you want to learn more about, the kind of trash that's washing onto our beaches. That's what we're offering at the... And then, also movie nights. We're starting this Saturday. Every Saturday night, we're going to try to do movies for the community. So we're getting surf movies, some documentaries, and family-friendly movies as well. We're hoping to get Finding Dory. So
that sounds like a lot of fun. So now getting to the piece de resistance, tell me a little bit about the water wheel or the trash water wheel that you guys have been fundraising for.
Yes, this project has been in the works for over a year now. The trash water wheel has been used in Baltimore's harbor for about 2 years, and they've been able to clean up over 1 million pounds of trash. So we're hoping to bring that to the Alawai, because anybody has walked past Alawai after heavy rain, you've probably noticed all the trash that's in there. And I've talked to kids too. I'm like, hey, what do you see in there? And I've had kids tell me they've seen bicycles, shopping carts. They've seen a lot of single-use plastic, styrofoams. And so we really want to clean that up. Cleanups start further upstream. We don't want to be reactive and just clean beaches. We actually want to prevent all that trash from ending in the ocean in the first place. And Alawai and all our rivers and streams lead to the ocean. So by bringing the trash water wheel, we can hopefully clean up the Alawai and prevent all that trash from getting there.
Sure. I love the idea. And by the way, it's three shopping carts because it's on my running route. So I can tell you where all of them are. And are you guys still fundraising for the water wheel, or what's the next steps of implementing it?
Yes, we are going to start fundraising because we have half of the amount that we need to bring. It's about $300,000 that the city has, $300,000 that the city has agreed to help us with, and then the rest we have to fundraise for it. And we're working with a few other partners, 808 Cleanup, Surf Rider, and so we're all going to just kind of pool in all our resources and try to raise funding to bring it here, because it's not as easy. It's really cool. It's literally a big wheel that runs with the energy of the water current and solar power, and it spins through the water, picking up trash and diverting it into dumpsters. So it requires maintenance as well, somebody to come out and just swap out the dumpsters. And so we're just, in the process of raising funding to construct something like that.
Well, I love it. I wish you the best of luck. I can't wait to see what comes up with it. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will learn more about conserving Hawaii's marine systems.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness.
can all be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk. But a simple blood test can detect the problem, and with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. Call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, the Marine Science Gal. We continue our discussion about giving back and doing good conservation work in Hawaii. With us now is Ashley Watts, CEO and co-owner of Local Aia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carly, for having me.
So first, tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Local Aia, we are working to scale the sustainability of Hawaii's fisheries by changing the way people both buy and consume seafood. So we have a CSF program, which is like a CSA, so you get a box of differing species of fish, depending on what the fishermen catch. And you sign up for that, we deliver that to the community, and we're starting a line to do restaurant deliveries as well.
Excellent. And what a great idea to do like a farmer's market box, but with local sustainable fish. How did you first get started on this idea, and how long has this been running for?
So Local Aia has been running since 2015.
Okay.
The idea came into fruition around 2014. It got started by two guys from Conservation International, Jack and Jason, and they founded the company. And they saw the need in Hawaii for the accessibility of locally caught sustainable fish. There's kind of only a couple places to get it around the island, and everybody doesn't really know where to get it unless you know a fisherman. So our idea is to provide the communities to be able to know their fishermen. So we connect them directly by providing local fish to them.
That's amazing. And so how, I imagine getting this started took some work. I mean, how did you engage the fishermen in this project and then bring it out to the public?
Well, I wasn't around in the very beginning. I came along with Local Aia back in September of last year.
Okay.
I got hired on by Jack and Jason as a seafood coordinator. I had a lot of experience in fisheries throughout my life. I came out here as a fisheries observer, and my uncles were fishermen in the past, so I kind of know how to talk to the fishermen. I'm not really sure how they did things prior to my coming on with the company, but now, yes, I engage the fishermen. I kind of talk story with them, see what they're all about, per se, and talk to them about what Local Aia is about and see if we have complementary value systems and make sure that they fish in a pono way, which is responsibly and sustainably, and they hold up legal and federal regulations and all of those kind of things.
So now this is just on Oahu, or do you have partnerships or agreements with fishermen on other islands?
Right now, the distribution is just on Oahu, but we do get Opelu from a sustainable fishery down in South Kona area on the Big Island in Mililii. They have a very sustainable program down there where they have been for years and years. The families have the tradition of feeding the Opelu and farming them. So we have a partnership with those guys, and we get them shipped over.
Excellent. Can you paint a picture? I'm so curious about what a local box or a monthly box of fish would be that you would get. Or is it monthly or weekly, or what's the time span on it?
So it's very flexible as to when you can get your shares. So as a customer or community member, you sign up for 4 shares initially, but you do not have to get those every week. We do weekly deliveries, but you pick when you get your deliveries.
Sure.
It would be once a week, so you could get them once a month, twice a month, you know, whenever you feel. And the share will come with 1.5 pounds or 3 pounds of seafood, and it will be packaged. It will also have a code on it, an alphanumeric code, as well as a QR code. And so you can go to the website, thisfish.info, and type in the alphanumeric code, and it'll bring up the information and the whole story on the fish. It'll tell you where they caught it, when they caught it, who caught it, how they caught it, and it gives you the opportunity to contact them yourself, so you can tell them how ono their fish is.
That's incredible. I love that.
And so once you get your share, you will have previously received a newsletter saying what you're going to get in the share, the species that it is, the fisherman that caught it, as well as several preparations of the fish. And if it's a whole fish, because sometimes we try to provide the smaller species because they are more sustainable, they reproduce faster and are highly replenishable. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to change the consumer behavior towards that. So we like to distribute whole fish. So sometimes people don't really know how to dehead the opelu or debone them or cook them. So we provide all of those instructions. And sometimes we're lucky to get oysters from Kualoa that you can add on to your share. And so we provide instructions on shucking those because not everybody knows how to shuck oysters.
Excellent. So you've mentioned a few different marine species. What are the types of seafood that you've had in the boxes in the past or that you continue to have?
So in the past, we've had a variety of species, anywhere from reef fish, manini. We've had Mari's Garden. We got the swai one time for the aquaculture. And we've had pelagics, ahi, mahi, marlin. We've done ta'ape. We're trying to get the fishermen to fish more for the invasive snapper, ta'ape, because it's very delicious, but not a lot of people know you can eat it. And the fishermen don't really think that people will buy it, so it's still hard for me to convince them to. Mm-hmm. But as we increase the customer amount and the demand, the fishermen are going to be more readily willing to go and catch those invasive species.
Are we throwing roy into the list as well?
No, unfortunately, roy is known to have ciguatera. As well
that
as
that could be a liability issue.
Yeah, as well as kaku and some of the other reef fish, like pilani and some of the herbivores.
Sure.
We're kind of hesitant to sell unless we know exactly where it comes from.
Yeah.
Sometimes Kualoa will get some of their invasive species from their fish pond. So they're not a fully traditional Hawaiian fish pond, but they do maintain a fish pond area where they do try to grow moi and other native species. Mm-hmm. And so we take their predatory fish and their invasives out sometimes. Sometimes we'll distribute it from there just because they do the water quality testing because they grow aquaculture oysters and shrimp in the waters surrounding.
Sure.
So they have that water quality results to produce to us to show that there's none of that in the waters.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, we're hesitant to serve.
Understandable.
Those herbivores.
You want to keep this as a good thing and not make people sick. And do you partner with any of the farmers' CSA boxes so you get your fish and your veg all at the same time?
It's funny that you mentioned that. We're actually growing to expand that area of business. Mm-hmm. We did have our shares in Holoholo CSA or back in the end of last year. We started that, and then we're going to expand to do that to Oahu Fresh as well. And those are going to be ways that we can get our seafood out to areas where we may not have a pickup site yet, like on the North Shore or out on the Central West Side. And so that'll allow the expansion of the distribution to increase until we can get further support to create a pickup site out there.
That's incredible. I love it. And you said restaurants, too, now are coming into the mix.
Yeah. So we have kind of come to the conclusion that we need to distribute our fish to the restaurants as well.
Absolutely.
In a more steadily way. So we always did retail and wholesale to the restaurants, but we never had a prepaid service or we never had chefs really commit to that mystery fish. And so we're trying to change their buying and consuming seafood as well. And so we recently are trying to mimic a program called Dock to Dish that's on the mainland, and they have a successful restaurant-supported fishery in which chefs commit to getting a certain amount of seafood every week, and they don't know what it is, and when they get it, it's kind of like the special of the day. So it's kind of getting away from that idea that you can just go into the ocean, it's like a grocery store, and you can pick what you have, you know, like that kind of limits the sustainability of our ecosystem. We only need to take what it will provide, and this is a way that we can foster that behavior.
Incredible. And so are there any good behavior chefs or restaurants we can call out?
Yeah, there's a lot. Actually, the interest in our restaurant distribution was kind of overwhelming. Me and Ed Kinney, our number one chef supporter, who owns several restaurants here in town, Mud Hen Water, the Superette, and now Mahina and Sons in Waikiki. He is local IA's number one supporter, and along with him, we hooied up a group of chefs a couple weeks ago, engaged the interest, and the interest was overwhelming. And so we're bringing be bringing on several restaurants for our pilot phase, including Vino and Fett and a couple other ones we were trying to decide. But we've even had, well, Gooch has always been one of supporter of ours, as well as Leanne down at Cocoa Head. But 12th Avenue Grill was there, Merriman was there, Sansei and DK Steakhouse is very interested. So we have several well-known restaurants that are very interested in serving their customers with the fish that they know where it comes from.
That's excellent. And so when you work with the restaurants, do you get to go try the seafood and see how they prepare it?
Yeah, that's the best part.
Can you tell I'm interested in this?
And that's the idea, too, is we're going to increase our customers' ability to do that as well. So say you get this weird fish in your box 1 week and you're like, wow. And you prepare it according to the recipe and you're like, yeah, this is all right, but it doesn't really get you. You know, like, it's good, but I still like my mahi just as good. Well, then you have the opportunity to go and try a chef's preparation of this same fish, and then you can kind of get some ideas and maybe you will like it just as good as your mahi.
Maybe you should include some recipe shares in the boxes.
We are thinking about that as well. Ed has actually suggested that he's wanting to further participate and kind of put a lot of his recipes and maybe some meal prep even into the box. So if it's a coated pan-seared fish, you know, you'd get the bread coating in the box as well. And so it's kind of a meal idea in a box.
Sustainable meal kits. I think you're onto something.
So there's many ways to expand.
Excellent. And so, I mean, for those of us that really aren't tied into the fishing community, how do we tell the difference between sustainable and unsustainable fisheries here in Hawaii?
The difference between sustainable and unsustainable fisheries is kind of hard unless you do have the background knowledge. I think the way that the community member can be sure that they're doing the right thing is to know where their fish comes from and to be okay with that themselves. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to provide that exact knowledge of where the fish comes from and let the customer decide what's sustainable. And we give those options that are more sustainable, but I think knowing exactly and supporting with your dollar and the consumer buy-in, I think, is a really important part.
So, in your opinion, is there certain sustainable fish that are okay to eat and ones that we should just stay away from completely?
In this area, there's not really a very no-go fish, as you would say. You know, there's bluefin tuna. Obviously, the population has crashed. We don't recommend eating that. We do love our ahi here in the islands. And fortunately, the nearshore populations of ahi are easier replenished than the pelagics, and they're not as targeted because they're not purse-seined. The nearshore fishers that we get are able to fish within the EEZ, so they're able to fish those areas where the larger boats aren't able to come in. And so we're actually starting to try to create a system to mitigate these fishers as well, because right now there's no monitoring system for nearshore fisheries. So we're going to work with DAR to create a system where the fishermen can collect the data that is needed to produce the fishing effort for DAR for the nearshore fisheries, so we can actually know what's going on in our nearshore fisheries as well.
That seems like a great plan. Now, I know Conservation International has had some funding support for you guys for your project and starting up. Are they continuing to support this initiative?
Yes, Conservation International shows support to us through the advisors that we get, and Jack Kittinger and Jason Philibot, who is still a co-owner as well. But also we have several people at Conservation International that we work with, like Eva Schimmel. She's a part of the group, and she does work on and research on the spawning of our coastal fishes. Mm-hmm. And so we're partnering with her a lot to get her in touch with the fishermen to ensure that they're fishing during their correct spawning seasons, as well as some other collaboration we do with Conservation International, promoting such things as Hawaii Seafood Month and just collaboration and trying to scale the sustainability in general of Hawaii's fisheries.
So where can people purchase if they want some sustainably caught fish?
So Local EA, you can go to the website and sign up for the CSF. We are currently planning to relaunch operations. We've had deliveries on pause since January to reorganize and the company, but we are relaunching the company in December. So if you sign up for the wait list on the website, you can get a share as soon as we resume deliveries, and that's tentatively next month.
Well, I think all three of you ladies today are an amazing example of people working in marine conservation and the communities here in Hawaii in so many different ways to help improve our ecosystems and giving back, especially during the holidays. That theme of giving back is so important. Marjorie, what other important cases or work would you like to highlight regarding the marine community that we should reflect on or think about?
Well, thanks for asking. One of the things I wanted to say is that it's really important to have access to the courts. And for the nonprofits in any nonprofit sector, I mean, it doesn't have to be environment, it can be human services, whatever, civil rights. It's really important to have access to the courts, because when all else fails, we can go to the courts and we can ask, you know, a judge or a jury, in our case a judge, to take a look at an issue and try and resolve it. And so one of the things we spend a little bit of time on is just monitoring the litigation that we've already settled. So, for example, we were one of the plaintiffs in litigation to protect seabirds on Kauai from lights, which disorient the birds, especially sure. The fledglings. And then they're also impacted by the wires, and trying to encourage utilities on the utility on Kauai to do some underground wiring in key flyways for the endangered Oahu, which is a petrel, the Hawaiian petrel, and the Newell Shearwater. So we're monitoring that, because the case was basically settled and we're kind of waiting until the whole island kind of figures out what they're going to do to protect these birds. And in the meantime, some very nice mitigation measures are being funded by the defendants, such as predator control, predator-proof fences. So that's a very positive outcome. You know, a lot of people are kind of down on litigation, but sometimes, especially when you settle, you can come up with some very creative and very effective resolutions. Another case that we settled and we were quite pleased with was a case against the Navy for sonar and explosive trainings that affect marine mammals and sea turtles. And so we got a very good judgment from federal courts, and then settled the case with the Navy. And it's the first time in my experience that the Navy has really come to the table and been serious about trying to avoid harming marine mammals in its training. It was very refreshing to yep. see. So I just wanted to bring those things up. And then also when we connect people with nature, I wanted to just mention the wildlife viewing program that is winding down, but I think we partnered with you in the past on, you know, trying to share information on how to view wildlife responsibly. Because our wildlife is an attraction to visitors and locals, yeah. but it is starting to cause some problems. Sea turtles, obviously, monk seals, you know, people approaching, kicking them, you know, standing on them, on the turtles. And then more recently, we're starting to see the feds wanting to address the dolphin issue sure. with their proposed rule from NOAA. So, you know, I think we'll continue in that effort. We did get some grants for some signage, and we have a wildlife viewing guide. So that's one way we're connecting people with nature.
Excellent. And you know, the spinner dolphin ruling is an issue near and dear to my heart. So
yes.
wildlife viewing is very important. And Magda, where can we go to sign up for beach cleanups or learn more about sustainable coastlines?
Well, you can visit our website, sustainablecoastlineshawaii.org, or you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram. We're very active on social media. We announce all our beach cleanups on Facebook and also on Instagram. So give us a follow to learn more about how you can help and how you can give back.
Well, thank you to all three of you today for coming and joining us to talk about some of these exciting initiatives. And I'm just amazed with the work that you all are doing. It's an inspiration, and we hope that you get to pay it forward and other people pay it forward by participating. And today's just a small example of some of the projects going on. To learn more, please join us on our All Things Marine website. I'm Carly Weiner. Now get out there and enjoy our ocean planet.